Hi everyone, welcome to the latest episode of Get Stuff Done. I'm Fintan Gavigan and I'm the co-founder of Collaborative, and we're a new marketing agency in Dublin. On this week's podcast, we're speaking to someone I know a long, long time, Lucy Campbell. Lucy has made that transition from traditional media to what was then a long time ago known as new media. She started off working in newspapers and then made that flip over to the digital side of the business. So Lucy, you're very welcome.
Hi, Fintan. How are you? Nice to see you again.
Good, good to see you too. Well, if you want to take the mic over to you, give us a bit of a background about yourself and what you do.
Thanks. Okay, so just thanks for the intro there. Just, I guess, even before I started working in print media, my career started in a completely different place. I was marketing golf courses. So just to add that in, that lasted a brief 18 months just after I graduated from college. But yes, I suppose really in my, I suppose in the last sort of 25 years of my career, I have, I suppose, had the pleasure and privilege of working with a number of very good and strong brands. Started off with Mirror Group newspapers, moving then into RTE and where I am at the moment, after a brief sojourn into my own consultancy, is working with the Adapt Centre, which is hosted by Trinity. So across those 25 years, I guess where it all began really was with the in print media. And I entered into a world, I guess, of tabloid, the ecosystem of tabloid journalism, newspaper circulation, which where your job as a circulation manager spanned everything from ensuring that the ink was the right color on the print run, especially when there was an All-Ireland final, to making sure that you had the right amount of papers in any retail outlet at any particular time. And I know there was these as what I always call as the heady days of the circulation wars in Ireland. I think obviously from the publication that you were involved in, Fintan, the Star was really the only game in town at that time. I think the Evening Press had just closed down. There was a couple of, you know, the broadsheets, obviously the Irish Times and the Indo were what all the clever people read, but the Star was the paper that did the racing, did the, you know, the sports and all the rest. And then in come the UK tabloids in the form of the Mirror and the Sun, who decided that there was this massive market that they could capitalize on. And I think the wars began really. So from around 1995 to when I left in 2001, we had a lot of fun, I think, just in terms of really driving newspaper sales within that overall tabloid market. I think a lot of that was driven by what was happening in sport at the time. There was a lot of really good feeling around the economy, and there were a lot of really good events. When I say good events, really good fodder for tabloid newspapers. Namely, I'll never forget that whenever Lady or Princess Diana tragically died in that car crash, the next day the big conversation around all of us who were working in the papers at that time was, what sort of interest is there going to be in this? How many more papers should we add on to the print run? And you know, what's the market going to be like? So this was this is the reason I tell this story, is that in that particular period, your job was to predict the market, was to predict the uplift in sales, was to ensure that you printed enough physical copies to get into the right amount of shops in order to anticipate that demand. So I think the difference now is when a really big story hits the headlines in a digital world, the capacity is endless. So the internet has given endless capacity for performance and for readership, listenership. Whereas in the early days, it was the job of the circulation person, our job, to predict that. So there was quite a lot of pressure on you, because if you didn't call it right, it meant that you'd missed the sale, so you missed your targets. But if you overcalled it, it meant that you just simply had printed too many papers, your waste levels are really high, and then you got a rap on the knuckles for wasting money. So I moved on then after that to from the tabloid world into a completely different environment, which was RTE. Firstly, started off marketing the RTE Guide, very similar job, biggest circulation of any magazine in Ireland at the time. And then I think my career in RTE was a very interesting one. And we started to sort of develop our digital products and services within RTE, and very slowly but surely, every year we would see the dial increase, where digital penetration of RTE services on digital platforms were just getting higher and higher. So ultimately, by the time I left, over 50% of the Irish population were engaging with RTE in some form or other on a digital platform. And we used to report regularly to our board and say that, oh, a lot of people are looking at our content across on mobile phone. And as I left, we were reporting that people were engaging with RTE sometimes on maybe 6 or 7 different digital devices, which would have been a mobile phone, which would have been laptop, iPod, iPads, through various other digital, over-the-top digital services. So the growth in terms of where the market was going digitally has been absolutely phenomenal.
Lucy, could you tell me about any work that you've done in the past that you're particularly proud of?
So some of the highlights from the type of work that I did in RTE was really using digital to create new platforms to deliver content to people in a different way. One of those was GAA Go, which was a project I was heavily involved in its initial launch and marketing, where we brought GAA games to the Irish diaspora via an app on a Sunday on demand for a subscription fee. And the fact that this sort of the digitization of GAA was able to radically change people's experience of GAA games outside of Ireland was phenomenal. They didn't have to go to the pub anymore at like 4 a.m., depending on where they were. They could watch the games with granddad, could watch with his 4-year-old grandson through the mobile phone in Auckland, New Zealand, or in Sydney, Australia, without having to worry about having to go and, you know, buy into the pub or whatever. So that was truly phenomenal in terms of using digital to bring essentially what was a part of Ireland's cultural heritage to the masses, if you like. I suppose another kind of core area was I worked on the whole project around digital switchover, where probably all sounds very technical now, but as the old analog TV service was turned off. So in other words, the TVs that had the rabbit ears, that was replaced with a digital service type. So my role was to ensure that anybody who was still operating with rabbit's ears would be able to switch their television type over to a digital TV. So that was a massive rollout, and I think it was very much part of government policy at the time to ensure that Irish TV households switched over to a digital platform.
So in the Adapt Centre in Trinity, can you tell me about any great stuff that you're working on at the moment?
The work that we're doing in Adapt is using AI and technologies to do more with less data, to tell people about things that they really only need to know about. So it's actually fascinating, because I think some of the work that we're doing at the moment in Adapt are things that I would have watched on Tomorrow's World 25 years ago. And it's so fascinating to see that all of these things that even kids today in school will imagine, you know, imagining a world of driverless cars, or having an avatar in your house who's going to be able to be your personal assistant, we're really not that far off that. And that has just been incredible for me to have endured from those early career days to be working in this particular environment. So I feel very fortunate and very privileged to have had such an interesting and collaborative career, as I've Which has spanned rather longer than I'd like to admit, but I think I've a bit more to go yet as well.
What would be your tip for someone on how to get things done, like a life hack or something you would say, here's my key to getting things done?
Yeah, I think my key tip is ask for help. Bring in as many people as possible into a project. And bring in people who know how to do the things that you don't know how to do, and don't try to do that yourself. And I think that that's been a real learning from possibly even through the COVID learning, is that as we're all working in this remote and digital world, there's almost a democratization of skills, and it's become easier to tap someone online and say, I'm having a problem with this, can you help me with it? Which has been, and the response rate back to that has been much quicker than you would within a normal working environment, where sometimes people don't have time, they could be locked in silos, may not be part of their particular projects. But I have found that there's been this lovely leveling in terms of skills and people willing to help. And I think that the remote working, the COVID situation, has really started to drive that, because everybody went back to a base level. Everyone's in the same boat.
Well, look, as things start to unlock, what's your plan for your big day out?
I suppose one of my big days out is I have a big achievement to do next year. I'm going to try and do the Wicklow 200 on my bike. And I think one of the things that I missed most from lockdown was that kind of freedom to be able to go to far-flung places in the hills of Wicklow or the hills of Donegal cycling. And I'm a late entrant to a cycling club and to cycling, and I think the sense of liberation has been amazing. So I just, the big day out will be going up with a group around the Wicklow 200 and achieving that. So that's the big plan for next year.
Lucy, thanks very much for the time today. Thanks for the chat.
Thanks,
and Vincent. The insights. And we'll catch up soon.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Bye-bye. Bye.